Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. MTSS implementation is not without its many challenges. And one of the essential components of meeting those challenges has having leaders willing to put in the work. And so today we are talking with one of those leaders, Makiri Pugh, a managing director of teaching, learning, and innovation at Maya Angelou Schools in DC. And he's here today to talk about their journey with MTSS. Welcome, Makiri.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. And, you know, we've had many conversations before this just about the work that you're doing at Maya Angelou Schools. And so I'm so excited to kind of dig into a little bit more to talk about sort of even just lessons that you're learning. Because I say not lessons learned because you're still in the works. So things that you're encountering. But first of all, I want you to tell the audience a little bit about Maya Angelou Schools and what makes your school a great place to be.
Yeah, so Maya Angelou Schools, we've had our charter for 27 years. We're based out of D.C., but we specialized in alternative youth and justice-involved youth. So what we would say are youth who are furthest from opportunity, some of those youth who people have given up on. It's a very, very relational culture, and I think that that culture trickles down to the students, which is something I really love about it as an organization. And it's interesting because a lot of people, when they think about alternative schools, they have a certain mindset of what an alternative school is, but alternative really means alternative methods. And I think we're trying things at Maya that aren't necessarily being tried all the time in traditional education and trying to reach students in a different way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're right. I think we do all have kind of our own idea of what an alternative school is. And so I'm excited for you to tell us a little, you know, to talk about your school. So when you were sort of first kind of implementing MTSS, and maybe MTSS predated your time there, but what would you say is part of the challenge of implementing MTSS in your school?
Yeah, it did predate me. And it was interesting because it was something that when I came in, it ended up, you know, coming across my desk, like, hey, we want you to take on this initiative. And, you know, like anyone else, I'm a little nervous about it. Like, okay, you want me to take on this initiative for our five schools? Okay. The biggest challenge, and I think any district, no matter where you are in the country, you deal with this initiative fatigue. Is this just another thing for teachers to do, for administrators to progress monitor? Like, how is it? Is it just another thing? Like, if you've been in education for any period of time, you have gone through all these different initiatives and all these different rollouts. What makes this one different? And that was part of what I had to tackle. This is not just another initiative. And a lot of it started with the fact that these are things we're already doing. We're just codifying it. We're putting a name to it. We're putting and aggregating all this information together to create a snapshot for a student. So that was one of the biggest issues. Like, here we go again. Another initiative, another new rollout.
Yeah. I like that you said it's about putting all of the things that you're already doing kind of in a more organized way or putting a name to it. Because I think about, you know, when I tell people about MTSS, they're like, well, aren't teachers already doing that? Or aren't they already supporting students? And in a lot of ways, these are the things that teachers do to pull together a small group of students that need a little more instruction about this one skill. Teachers usually are doing that, but creating a more organized, systematic way, or even just putting that in a part of the policies that this is how we do things. This is our standard treatment protocol for when a student needs more assistance. I think it's really essential to make sure that every student, you know, that no student falls through the cracks of not getting that support. And so I think that you're right in some of that challenge of making sure that everyone, like, this is already the things that we're doing. So I like that you highlighted that. So when you first started this work with your staff, and I think many of our listeners can kind of relate to this sort of moment of how did you initially frame it to your staff? How did you go about that conversation?
The biggest thing when framing it is this is stuff that we're already doing. This is not new. We are not reinventing the wheel. We are now going to organize and aggregate this data to create a snapshot that's going to let us more effectively teach students. How many teachers across the country don't necessarily communicate with the culture team? And there are things that happen with the student and they don't know. So they're not aware that they may trigger that student, or they're not aware of something that student may need. Well, now you have a centralized snapshot of what's going on with that young person. Every student values that. Every culture team values that. Every culture team member, if you're out for a day and you know what's going on with that student, when you return to school, it makes a huge difference in your approach. So centralizing and solving challenges that your teachers, your staff, your administrators have asked you to solve. This is actually solving challenges that teachers all across America, administrators, culture team members all across America are asking to solve. How do we centralize communication, even if we're not getting a chance to talk about a student? Now I can go in and see a snapshot that tells me everything, at least anecdotally and data-wise, about that student, and I can respond to it even if I don't get a chance to sit down, because we know how busy educators are. So things that you're already doing, but we're centralizing it, we're formalizing it, and why? We're solving a challenge that you guys have asked us to solve. And then the of it.
Was that well-received? They're like,
it was, oh, yeah. It was. And I'll talk a little bit more about how that ended up happening. But when we talk about this, it is a way of doing things, and it is naming what we already do. So just a small example, tier one instruction. Oh my gosh, what is tier one instruction? It's the instruction that we do every day in classrooms across America. That is a teacher showing up with a lesson plan and teaching students. That's all tier one is, right? So we start formalizing this language, and it becomes, when we break it down and explain it, it becomes less intimidating because it's part of what we're already.
Yeah. Well, and I know when you first talk about MTSS, multi-tiered system of supports, people are like, that seems really complicated. Why are we doing this other thing? Like you talked about the initiative fatigue, another thing. And I think when you break it down into those tangible terms, or even just saying, hey, this is just a name for the things that you're already doing. It's just a system.
Everyone in America looks at attendance. Everyone in America looks at academics. Everyone in America looks at behavior. These are things you're already doing. You're already looking at. These are not new data points. They may have been scattered previously. We may not have had a nice formal snapshot or be able to see the data and the trends, but every school in America, whether you're a private school, alternative school, it doesn't matter. Attendance, data, behavior, you're looking at those things on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you talk about sort of like your culture teams and things like that. What were some of the things that you did, like beyond just sort of having those conversations, like this is what we're already doing? How did you shift that perception of MTSS? What were some other things that you did from compliance, like that it's a requirement that we have to do, to that it's part of building our culture in the school?
Yeah. Economy of language is imperative. And here's what I mean by that. MTSS cannot live over here as a bucket by itself. It has to be ingrained in all of your processes, and it should be. So for instance, when we did our instructional kickoff, this is our day where we talk about instruction. In our initial kickoff, we started to work on our language and talk about tiers of instruction. So tier one instruction, here are the expectations. Students will have formative and summative assessments, so on and so forth, right? Tier two, things that you're already doing as an ELA or math teacher, where you're grouping your students based on the data that you're getting from a formative, or maybe you're getting that based on iReady or iExcel data, ReaderMath 180 data, things that we're already once again doing, and maybe we're going to formalize more, right? And then tier three, hey, we all have a couple of those students who need some sort of intensive intervention. This is where I'm going to have my co-teacher pull that student, or my TA pull that student, or I'm going to work with that student individually, or that one or two students individually. So we started talking in the MTSS way. So we ingrained that. So now when I talk to my principals, what is tier one instruction looking like in math? What are we doing from an intervention standpoint in ELA? So then it becomes a part of what we're doing. And one of the things I'm very, very proud of, even our special education team, before they go and they give students IEPs, or there's an inquiry from a lawyer about how we're supporting a student, bridging that gap. Let's have a conversation. What's the MTSS process been for this student? Or hey, before we give the student an IEP or a 504, let's take them through a 6-week cycle with some supports and see. Everywhere in America, we say we're overdiagnosing students. This also gives us a unique opportunity to intervene without students always having to go to the IEP. And in my experience, anecdotally, I would say 50 to 70% of the time, it actually pulls students back to where we're looking for them to be, rather than having to diagnose those students with some sort of disability a lot of the time. And it also, once again, it opens up that frame of communication between gen ed and special education, which we know in any school is imperative that those groups are communicating.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the biggest selling points of MTSS, is that pulling in all the right data points allows people to really get an insight into, is this student really in need of an IEP, or are they need more intensive support in this certain area that they're not getting? And do they respond to that intervention, right?
Absolutely. And some of the data as well helps you write a better IEP.
Yes.
You have that data and that information that says, we've taken the student through this cycle. We've tried this intervention, this intervention, this intervention. Here were the results. Here's what was effective. Here's what was not effective.
And I think you're right. Like, it's a better written IEP, better support for that student in the long run if you have all of that data first. And I know that there's many teachers that may feel, oh, we're delaying. Why are you delaying this process when they know? But it's like, actually, no, they have a right to go through this process before we land on the IEP.
And I'll give you another just beautiful example. So our special education teams use the MTSS process. They document interventions and they track, is this working to improve the student's growth scores in math and in ELA? Is it not working? How much time on task did they get? So it bridges a gap, but it also enhances the work that's already being done. And it is beautiful because now I get emails all the time from my different staff members like, hey, taking the student through a process, can you take a look at this data with me? And I'm like, that warms my heart because that lets me know we're on the right track and we're making it.
Yeah. I don't know who else would say that data warms their heart beyond like an MTSS person.
Big data guy here, right? Big data guy.
You're like, data warms my heart. I wanted to point that out because I don't know if there would be many, but I would say that as the data person of my school, that spreadsheets and well-organized data just made me very happy. Okay. So, you know, you're talking about some of those things that you're ingraining in the foundational structures and systems. Was it easy to kind of scale that? Did you start small or did you have to grow it or did you just like kind of throw it out to everybody and run with it? How did that you kind of grow into where your MTSS process is?
Yes. Now? So this is where it gets challenging. And I say, it's going to look slightly different at every school. It's going to look slightly different at every organization, slightly different. So I'll give you an example. When we sat down and we mapped out how we were going to support our special education students who are in self-contained classrooms, right? More restricted environments. And we looked at the instructional model. Well, we're using gradual release. It's a small group instruction. We have several adults in the classroom. We have someone who's designated to do tier 2 interventions. So we use IXL at one of our campuses. We have someone designated to do those tier 2 interventions for 15 to 20 minutes every day with students. So we built it into the model. We baked it into the model, right? When some of our ELA teachers break out into groupings, we baked it into the model. When you break these groups and your co-teacher breaks off, those groups should be put into the system. We should be able to see that. We should be able to see what specific interventions you're giving. So it's baked into what we do. Once again, it's not extra. It's not added. And another thing about the data piece, we need to acknowledge and admit that not everybody's comfortable with data. Even people who are on the executive and central support side, like myself, not everyone is comfortable with data. But let's all take on this together as a team, right? Take some of that, math anxiety. You know, people get math anxiety. I think educators get data anxiety. So one of the things that we're also doing is norming data-centered discussions. And we're doing that as an organization. And the MTSS system is beautiful for that because now when we talk attendance, we're talking data. We talk behavior, we're talking data. Okay, I see there was a spike in incidents the last 2 weeks. Where do you think that came from, right? Or we see there was a reduction in incidents. What are you guys doing differently? Or we see this particular student is responding really well. So far, their referrals are down 20%. You start to norm those conversations, those discussions, those data pieces. And then it becomes less intimidating. So, you know, You put these things in place, you put frequencies and protocols in place. We like 6-week cycles. So we'll use those. We'll map it out and say, here's how long we're going to go. Here's where we're meeting. Here's the meeting protocol. And I would also just say, district leaders, don't be afraid to get on the ground. I spend a lot of time on the ground supporting those meetings, helping with those meetings. And after they do it once or twice, it's no longer this crazy, intimidating thing. It's like, oh, that's all we had to do. Okay, that wasn't so bad, right? So that's definitely kind of how we're attacking it in my.
I definitely think that there's data anxiety, and some of it has to do with sort of that idea of being punitive or being about compliance or about evaluative. You walk into that meeting, we're looking at data from your classroom or from your students, and it can really feel very evaluative or even just, we're here to tell you all the things you're not doing right. It took me a long time to kind of figure out, you know, we examine the data so that we can grow and learn and get better at it. I would love to talk a little bit about the kind of the daily instruction. You talked a lot about tier one. Did you have to do some work with your tier one instruction?
Absolutely. So one of the things that people have to really acknowledge is that if your tier one instruction is not tight, you can't get to tier two and tier three. Tier one is when you get a lot of your data from. So the first thing that we had to do was make sure that we're tightening up our tier one instruction across the board. Are we formatively assessing students on a daily basis? Do we have summatives? How are we responding to that data? If you tell me that this student is in need of more intense intervention, can you show me that from a data perspective? Because sometimes, and this happens, I had a teacher I'm working with one-on-one supporting this teacher, and this teacher is concerned that this particular student is in need of, you know, tier two or maybe even tier three support. But then we looked at the data, and the data actually didn't support that, right? It was kind of just the behavior of that student that was making it seem like they needed support. So it wasn't academic tier two support that that student needed. It was behavior tier two support that student, right? So it really gives us that opportunity. But I would say anywhere, you have to tighten up your tier one because your tier one is going to surface the need for tier two and tier three. So across the board, the first thing I would ask any organization, when I'm talking to outside organizations, I'm talking to other people, what's tier one instruction look like? Is it being implemented? Are you gradual release? Are you small group instruction? Are you seeing it on a daily basis? How strong are your teachers? Have you tiered your teachers? What teachers are struggling? What teachers need support? Those things are really, really important. So I think sometimes all these fancy bells and whistles we talk about, we forget that tier one is the number one indicator of student achievement. If you have strong teachers who are delivering that, it tells you a real story.
Yeah. Did that mean that you guys had to sort of examine the curriculum itself or like materials or resources? Because I know a lot of schools have to kind of spend some time evaluating whether they have high quality curriculum.
We took a comprehensive look. We actually rolled out 4 core curriculums at all of our school sites. So some was curriculum we were already using. So what we did is we looked at data. We also spoke to different organizations and things like that. And then we also ended up rolling in a couple of new curriculums, like for instance, social studies. We rolled in a new Thinking Nation, M-Scopes for science. We're using that now. So we want to make sure we have the proper baseline tools for our teachers, because sometimes your tier one instruction can be an example of your curriculum not being strong or just not fitting the needs of your students. So that was one of the things that we had to do. We took a comprehensive look at instruction. We spent months polling, doing walkthroughs. We did instructional walkthroughs with our school leadership. And we had to identify areas that needed to be tightened up. So when we had our instructional kickoff, we talked about things that we expected to happen in every classroom across our organization, no matter what. We just think through osmosis, our teachers are going to know that this is the expectation, this was supposed to happen. But you got to remind them, right? So we even at one of our campuses changed the master schedule because we didn't feel it was serving students. All of our class periods were not equal. So some teachers were experiencing burnout because they had longer class periods than our others. So wanted to even that out, create more flow for students. So we took a comprehensive look at our instructional program and did some overhauling. Some things were already good. Some things need to be tightened up. But that also built that trust and laid that foundation for that tier one instruction. So when it comes to now implementing these MTSS processes with tier two and tier three, teachers are ready for it. They're open to it. And then once again, some of it they're already doing.
Yeah. Do you have any other examples about how maybe looking at the data has really sort of opened maybe teachers' eyes to how there's other needs that need to be met?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give you 2 different examples. One is kind of a social emotional example and one's attendance. So attendance first, everybody can relate to this. We know that sometimes a student's grades or a student's ability to achieve are impacted by how much they're in the building, how much they're in the classroom. There's a direct correlation and how often a student is showing up to school and how they're performing academically. So once again, is this an academic issue or is it an attendance issue? If we can improve this student's attendance, if they are a student who's attending school at a 55% clip and we can get them up to a 70% clip, how many points does that account for in GPA? How many points does that account for in evaluation and assessment? So when we see a student and we're seeing them below, let's say 60% attendance rate, we're going to immediately attack attendance before we even talk about the academic side, because you're not even here enough for us to give you a true evaluation of where you are academically. So some of my teachers are like, right? Every teacher's like, why are they not coming to school? But sometimes not making the correlation between being in school, in the classroom, and receiving the instruction itself. And if you look at when those students are absent, thinking about math, for instance, where you are introducing a concept, and if you miss that concept because math spirals, you cannot then move on to the next concept. So if the student was out for a week and they missed distributive property, and then you're moving on to another concept, that student is going to be lost. So then also the academic intervention they need is catch up on distributive property. It's not actually just that they're not actually able to hang. And I can speak to my own experience as a student in the 7th and 8th grade taking algebra and missing that segment and struggling the rest of the year. Nobody identifying myself when I was younger.
Yeah.
Social,
even,
emotional.
Even more so that like you miss out and it doesn't make you want to come more.
Yeah.
You're struggling. It doesn't make you actually want to get to school if you're just going to sit there and struggle.
Yeah. So social emotional standpoint, working in DC, and we know in a lot of urban districts and even rural districts, you're dealing with a lot of challenges with our young people. Sometimes the thing that is distracting that student academically has nothing to do with their understanding. We've had students who've had a parent pass away, and the teacher may not be aware of that. Sometimes there's an anniversary of a passing of someone who meant a lot to a student. The other week, I'm in the hallway, and we have a student who's having some challenges. And I start walking with the young man, giving him some proximity to find out kind of what's going on with him. And that week was the anniversary of his cousin, who was his best friend, passing away. So the student, it's not that they don't want to engage. This week for them is traumatic. So how do we wrap support around this student from a social emotional standpoint before we bring them back to the academic side? But if we don't know that information or we're not thinking about those things, we'll think it's a purely academic thing. This student just doesn't want to engage. And that's why telling a complete story for these students is so important. It's so important. And a lot of the time, it's not just academic. It's more than that.
Well, and really that social emotional well-being of the student is a foundation for them learning, right? If they don't feel safe, if they don't feel emotionally safe, they're going to have a harder time learning. And you kind of have to address those needs before tackling that, the academic piece. And which is really hard, I think, sometimes for teachers. And I think secondary teachers encounter this a lot because we spend 45, 50 minutes with a student out of their day. And our job is to teach them the content area. And so having to kind of also be a bit of a counselor to them as well is hard. And so I think the piece of MTSS that is, to me, is so appealing is that idea of the whole child. You have a team that can collaborate on how to help a student. And it's not just about that one teacher, right? It's about the counselor Absolutely. And the social worker and everyone else on the team to help make sure that that student is successful.
Absolutely. And just to give you another example, I was a person who has math anxiety. We had a student recently. We looked, they're doing well in every class but math. In math, the behavior is different. The academic achievement is different just across the board. This student is a different student when they're in this math classroom than they are any other period out of the day. So then we try to figure out why is that? Well, obviously, conceptually, the student is having some challenges understanding. But you know what we did when we talk about tier one? We shifted that student's schedule into a class with smaller groups. Then that student's not as embarrassed to ask a question. Then that student can get a little more individualized instructional attention. So even that is not even a tier two intervention. That's what's making a shift in a schedule, knowing that this student needs a smaller environment for this particular content area because it's intimidating or they haven't had the best experiences with it. That is the power of MTSS. And that is at the heart of what MTSS is, making data-informed decisions for the betterment of students, which we all are as educators want to do. So that was just an example I wanted to give you because it's something we had to do recently that didn't even require a tier two. Just let's move them into a smaller class and see how they work. And they've been doing a lot better.
Well, and sometimes I feel like some of those small changes, in your day to day, that's a small thing that means so much to a student, right? That small change of like he had an opportunity to be in another class with a smaller group of students, less embarrassed, more engaged. That can change the trajectory of his life that maybe he kind of latches on to math and that changes something for them. And I think even just the examples of attendance and addressing a student's attendance, getting them to school, if we didn't intervene, if we didn't do those things, they're on one path, but we get to have the opportunity to help them make sure that they're on a better one. And so this just portrays the power of MTSS in a lot of ways. I wanted to kind of go address something you mentioned earlier, just about you changing the master schedule because noticing some teachers having long class periods and that can contribute to teacher burnout. What other steps have you taken to ensure that sort of this MTSS system is sustainable for your staff over time?
Yeah, that is the biggest thing. So one thing I always tell people to start with, particularly in the beginning, start with the most minimally invasive documentation methodology you can use or something you're already doing. I'll give you guys an example. If you're already using a quick referral system or some sort of referral system, shift that into whatever system you're using because they're already doing it. Now it's not an extra step. It's something they're already doing. We're just shifting it here. And why are we shifting it here? So that everybody can get a complete data snapshot. Guess what? When I taught and I had a student who was challenging, I could look at a note that tells me that this student is heightened this morning. So when they get to my class, I already kind of know how I may need to approach that student. So the biggest thing is minimally invasive. We're going to come in with things. One of the things that I think is super powerful, and I'm always talking about it, is check-ins with the student. 5-minute check-in at lunch or a check-in pull-out outside of class would be 2 or 3 minutes. A student feels seen. A student feels cared about. And a student, I saw huge dips in behavior when a student is checking in with a trusted adult. Now, what is 3 to 5 minutes out of your day for a teacher to check in with a student on their lunch break or in transition or during a break time in class? So starting with things that they're already doing, things that are minimally invasive, things that are simple, things that are easy. We don't always have to reinvent the wheel. Meetings. A lot of the time, your MCSS meetings can be a part of meetings you're already having. Most schools have some sort of culture meeting, some sort of attendance meeting, right? Those meetings are already happening. You add MCSS as a part of that process, so it's not an extra meeting. It's once again ingrained in what you're already doing. So when the culture team meets and we're talking about intervening with students, MCSS is a part of the process of how we do that. When the attendance team is meeting and we're talking about student attendance trends and things like that, MCSS is already ingrained in a part of that. So ingraining MCSS in what you're doing, once again, I keep saying it, MCSS is not a separate thing. It's what you're already doing with some guardrails, with some organization to it, and creating a pure snapshot. Everybody in America, for the most part, is already doing some elements of this. This is going to formalize it and make it more powerful. So those are a few different things that we've done.
Do you feel like it's sustainable for teachers? Not even sustainable, but do you feel like that they've seen the results of how, like, the power of MTSS, which has brought more buy-in?
One of my favorite things, and this is, I'm going to tell you a story about when I was school-based as an assistant principal, was being able to show wins. There's nothing more powerful than showing a win. There's nothing more powerful than taking a student through a 6-week cycle, putting their data up from before and after. I'll never forget, I had a young lady, and people just were not sure she was going to make it that year. She was getting into it on a daily basis. And through 6 weeks of checking in with a trusted adult and doing some small group SEL work with our school social work and psychologist team, her incidents went from daily to once a week during that 6-week cycle. A teacher sees that and then they start to believe, show results. Something I do on a biweekly basis is I'll shout people out who I see doing documentation, who I see adding information, or just wins. Hey guys, I saw a trend up the last time we did our testing or our I-rate, right? Like, you can shout out wins and they don't all have to be huge. Hey, October, we saw a spike in attendance in the 9th grade. Or in this specific cohort of students. There's so many different things that you can look at to pull out wins. And those wins are what develop the belief system of your teachers. If you don't highlight the wins and they think they're just doing it for no reason. And sometimes a teacher will come to you and be like, you know what? I've seen a difference in this student. I wonder why. And then you're able to explain, here's what we've been doing with this young person that's helped them get here. And conversely, you're responding to teachers. Teachers don't quit because they don't like teaching. Teachers quit because they don't feel supported. They feel like things that are happening are not being responded to. They feel like there's no plan when something doesn't work. So if we go and we take 5 kids through a cycle, we may be able to show wins with 3 of those students, but 2 of these students may be in need of more intensive support. So not even did we show wins and that this process is working, but we're still saying, hey, Ms. Smith, we're not going to leave you out to dry with this student. We're going to now escalate this to a tier 3 plan, and here's what we're going to do. And teachers appreciate that. Whether it works or not, in some instances, they appreciate seeing a response and being supported.
I think that honestly, you kind of named that thing that makes teachers, I think, disempowers or even just makes them feel hopeless, is that when they escalate a problem where they say, hey, there's this problem that I'm out of tools. I don't know how to handle this. If they don't feel that anyone else has their back, then they feel really hopeless of what they can do in their classroom. Because maybe it's not even that they may have not tried everything, but having someone to say, hey, I believe you. I believe that you've tried all these things, but here's an idea. Have you tried this thing? Or even just saying, hey, we're going to talk about them the next time we meet. We're going to talk about this student and see if we can come up with a plan. Or even just bring them up in the team meeting and know that you're not the only one that's struggling. Like, having those kind of conversations really helps teachers feel not alone in what they're doing or the challenges that they're encountering.
You just named something so powerful. And also feels
like someone has their back.
You just named something so powerful. One of my school leaders, we have a very challenging student who was having a lot of challenges, and we didn't have a lot of information on this student because they're new. One of my school leaders pulled every teacher, teacher assistant, dedicated aide, culture team member who interacted or interacts with their student on a regular basis into a room to talk about how we can support that student through our MCSS process. And just the fact that different people were surfacing different experiences that they had with that student created an air of camaraderie, created an air of relief. Oh, it's not just me. And then, by the way, finding out information that another person didn't necessarily know. Now we put that into a system. Now everybody can see it. But that does create more camaraderie. It does take some of the pressure off. It's not just me with the student. It does give you more information. That is so powerful. And I would encourage school leaders to do more of that. Now, this was a tier three student. You can kind of guess at that point. But it's powerful when you get everybody together, because how often are we together intentionally targeting support for students and young people?
Yeah.
And before anybody gets concerned about, oh my gosh, there's just so many students, there are very few students by percentage that tend to be in need of tier three intervention. Less than 10% of your students should be in need of tier three intervention. I would argue if you have more than 10% of your students in need of tier three, more than 20 to 25% of your students in need of tier two, even in an urban environment, we need to look at that tier one instruction.
Yeah.
We need to look at tier one. So these should be smaller groups of students that we're going to tier two and tier three with, not the entire group of students, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important to name, right? Because, I think a long time ago, right, someone said that you can let that 5% of students sometimes cloud the perception of your day, right, that you encounter. And it's really, you know, a majority of my students were great, but sometimes those three students that I encountered throughout my day could just, you know, ruin my day, because it always just made me feel a little, as a teacher, like a failure that I wasn't able to help them, that they weren't able to participate in my class, or, you know, that I had to write them up or something. But I think something too that you named is that even in that group of students, how powerful it is even when the chance is to bring the parents in, if the parents are, or the family, so that you can kind of be a village for that student, right? Be a community, everybody on the same team. I think that's really important part of MTSS, that we all, our goal is to help the student, right? That's the common goal, and that we want to do what it takes to be able to make them, help them be successful and provide the support that they need. Even, you know, I think encountering teenagers that maybe say they don't want the support, but they do need it, right? Like, I think that's sometimes the hardest part, is when they get old enough to make those kind of choices. But I think that it's just important to name that collaborative, the power of that collaborative meeting for students.
Yeah, you're stronger together as a staff, as educators, we're stronger together. You know, it's also interesting when you talk about teenagers, because we work with high schoolers primarily. High schoolers going through a lot of changes, want to save face, don't want people to know some of the things they're going through. One of the most powerful examples that I've ever had, and I'll never forget this student. There was a young lady, and she used to show up to school late every day. And when she showed up to school late, she would get into it with the front office people. She would get into it with the dean on the floor, and she would get into it with the teacher. And I pulled her to the side one day, and I asked her kind of like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, you seem like you want to be here. You're showing up, and I appreciate that. But, you know, we want to make sure that you're able to actually interact in this environment in a way that's conducive for everybody. Well, we find out the young lady's going through some things with her mother. So every morning she ends up late to school because she's having issues with her mother, and that ends up making her late. And then what happens? She gets a touch point that's negative, where it's like, you're late. Then he comes to the floor. You're late again. Comes to the class. You're late. So I asked the student, it sounds like you just need a few minutes to collect yourself when you first arrive, whether late or not. You need a few minutes to collect yourself. Right? Because then we're asking you to do math. So what we did in this particular case is that student would get 2 to 3 minutes in my office just to kind of sit down, reset. If I wasn't available, I would pull that student on before. And we saw a complete 180 just on the change in entry to the day, getting a mindful moment. And how many of us as adults need a mindful moment? How many of us step outside of a meeting, go for a walk, take a breath? Some of these things that these young people need aren't any different than the things that we do, except that we're old enough to now know what we need and know how to self-regulate. And some of this, we're teaching them how to self-regulate. Let me go in the bathroom and get myself together for a moment before I go into this meeting. Let me take a few deep breaths. We're teaching them the tools as well. And some of the young people will learn these tools and start to apply them to themselves and won't even need to give them that intentional support. But that's one of my favorite examples, because this young lady turned it completely around, became an honor roll student just off of starting to regulate and take breaks in between. Yeah.
You're right. Like, they have not learned some of those self-regulation techniques that maybe most adults hopefully have. So helping them recognize, when you're feeling this way, here's what you can do to help yourself calm down.
And I want to name a very, very, it's a simple trick, but it is the most powerful thing I ever did and got the best result. When we first started our MTSS process at one of our locations, the first question was, who has a relationship with this student? Because guess what? It's dual buy-in. Not only is that student going to receive that person, but the person who's working for that with that student has more of a ownership stake in that student. So I always started with, can I pair you with a teacher or staff member who wants you and also has a relationship with you for the check-in? So you're going to check in with Miss O'Neill every morning when you get here for 2 to 3 minutes, or you're going to check in with Mr. Hughes. I know this student's mom. I know this student's family. This student has confided X, Y, and Z in me. So now we're not doing random assignment. And then The number of students who you find out are not connected, it tells you something else. Because we know students need to have some connections to the school building with a trusted adult. And when I find that out of 10 students who are struggling, three or four of them don't have a relationship with a trusted adult, how do we intentionally cultivate that relationship? Who can we send in to build a relationship with that student? Because at the end of the day, just like the workplace is all relationships, education is all relationships with our students. It's not that different. It looks different, but it's not that different. I have to formulate relationships with my school leaders every day. And I got to cultivate and I got to revisit. And sometimes I got to reset them. We got to do the same thing with these young people.
Yeah. I want to end on that note, just that idea about how so much of it is about relationships and the ability to cultivate that positive relationships with students and staff, you know, because I that's a note to the leaders too. So much of that work. I started this podcast out talking about how MTSS, it can only be successful with strong leadership. And I think that that's important to name, that like that intentional leadership that go about building positive relationships with your staff will carry your MTSS so much further. And same thing that you would hope for your teachers to do with the students. It starts with those things. A very foundational piece of education is just relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Makiri, thank you so much for being here. I was going to ask you advice, but I feel like this whole podcast was advice that you could give to other leaders. I just so much appreciate you willing to take the time and share about your school. And it sounds like your teachers and your staff are doing some really cool things. And I'm just excited to continue to learn more from your staff and hear more great things. So thank you.
Absolutely. Always happy to share. And I'm always talking about this stuff. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, feel free. I'm on LinkedIn and all that good stuff. But it's important. It's important work across America. It's important work in all our schools. So anytime I get a chance to come talk about this, especially with you guys, I really do appreciate it. So thank you again, Larissa.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branchy Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branchy Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.